Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast today is, I just saw it, so it's July 24th.
I think July 24th.
Look at you being
correct.
Because I glanced at it on my phone by accident, so. Because I would have got it wrong. I would have got it wrong otherwise, I'm sure. How's everybody doing? We missed a week. I was on vacation in Mexico.
Mexico.
So I'm back. Trying to keep my tan going.
Speaking of which, I got to come see you, bro.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. Are you coming into this? Are you in the
city
today?
Got your cigars.
Yeah, man. I'm going to come get that. Don't worry.
Are you in the city today?
I can be.
Only reason because you can come see me, or I have to go by your office, the Mon Ami office.
Oh, okay.
So I could bring them down there. It's up to you.
All right, cool. Yeah, we'll arrange it.
You'll figure it out. But anyway, yeah. So I was in Mexico for 5 days, 4 nights in lovely Cancun. I did not stay on the Strip. I stayed like in an area called. What's it called? Marina Punta Cancun, which is kind of basically they're turning it into their version of South Beach. Mm. It's kind of like, it's like maybe 10 or 15 minutes from the Strip, so it's not really far, but it's its own kind of section. It's connected to this huge mall that they have, and it's a lot of like water canals and a lot of like they're building condos like left and right. High-rise condos. They're putting an SLS there in that same section. We stayed at a Renaissance property, which was only 3 months old, brand new, spanking new. I really enjoyed it though. I had a good time. I actually like not being on the Strip. The Strip is dope, but it's a lot going on. You know what I'm saying? Like, I kind of like being away from it and being able to go to it and then come back to it.
I went to Cancun once and I was on that Strip and the EDM music, the fucking cop, like I had no idea that it was gonna be that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Although
I've been to Cancun once, but I was in the cut somewhere. I mean, I think people still do think of Cancun as like a party destination, but I was off in the cut somewhere in a little resort chilling.
Yeah. And even on the Strip, they're building a lot of new properties. I'm assuming, it's just my opinion. I don't want to get anyone else in trouble on this podcast. That with the large amounts of capital that flow through certain entities in Mexico, who shall remain nameless, there is money there that needs to be spent.
Wash,
spent, you know, just one hand after the other, you know what I'm saying? You know, tomato. And so there's a lot of like these brand new, beautiful restaurants and like, you know, like top end food and, you know, they flying in the best chefs and, you know, it's like we only went to two or three restaurants. So every restaurant we went to was like you could tell was like brand new and like velvet chairs and, you know, like just over the top, like just, you know, what's it called? Like, a luxury, I guess, for lack of a better term. It's everything is new and fresh and high end. And they're building more of those. So I think they're trying to shift Cancun a little bit to be more of a higher end place. They want to try to compete with some of the other places as opposed to make it, like you said, like the Strip, the party, get drunk, EDM, throw up on the street type of shit. You know what I'm saying? They're trying to shift.
Yeah, because as much as folks love that crowd, like in terms of like the, like they don't spend no money.
Nope.
God bless them, but they don't spend any money, okay?
And they tab shit.
Yes, they eat once a day, okay, from a street corner vendor. They're not spending bread in a restaurant. Like, you want people that's going to come down there, and if they spend $300 a day, you know, between, you know, moving around, excursions, you know, eating, dining, all of that sort of shit, like, that's the kind of clientele they're looking for. And like you said, that's not going to tear up the goddamn hotel room.
Exactly, yeah. And you can see it, like, you can see kind of like in those restaurants, you can see that new money.
Right.
Like those young Mexicans coming in and they fly and they got the watches and they got their girls and they spinning paper and they pulling up in the rides. And, you know, it's just that it's a different energy, I'm sure, than it was a few years ago. So, and of course, the peso is, you know, the dollar's crazy strong down there still. So, like, you know, you can, you know, you go down there and hit an ATM and get a bunch of pesos. Yeah, it was crazy, man. Like, you just, you know, I was walking around like Mr. Drysdale when we checked out and just giving out money. Here's 100 pesos for you. Here's 100 pesos for you. Hey, I like you. Here's 100 pesos for you. And when, you know, and my girl was like, the fuck are you doing? And I'm like, so I gave the dude 200 pesos. That's like $13.
That's how we were in Cuba.
You know what I'm saying? Like, why not? Like,
tipping motherfuckers out the wazoo.
Yeah, because, well, first of all, I'm not bringing the pesos back. And, like, why not? Like, okay, I gave a guy $16. Like, maybe he, that you know, that it makes him have a good day. Is, you know, what I'm going to do. $16, you know, that's lunch here. Not even.
Not even. That's trip to the bodega.
Yeah, that's breakfast. That's breakfast. Yeah,
that's watermelon and a Fiji water.
Right.
Word, especially for some of these Korean delis. They'll be banging their head up all kind of dumb shit. So, anyway, I highly recommend Cancun. Like I said, if you can, try to find somewhere to stay like a little bit off the strip, and you'll have a really good time. The service is great. The people are really nice and friendly, and it was fun. And I'm mad I'm back. Walk back into the goddamn heat wave too, by the way. Which I'm glad it's over now, because the 3 days was brutal.
Brutal.
Woo,
and people really, I was looking at Instagram like, y'all niggas is really outside going to stuff in this heat. I was in the house.
Yeah, like, niggas was at parties and niggas was at the park. I did ride my bike, though. I did ride my bike, what day was that? Sunday evening, I rode my bike. So it wasn't, the sun wasn't up, but it was.
I do want to give a shout out. Because y'all know I live in Washington. Well, me and Jeff both live in Washington Heights, but I live on the loud side of Washington Heights. I want to give a shout out to the Dominicans. Nobody does outside in summertime like these niggas. And
they
on
live
Saturday
outside.
Night, they live outside. And on Saturday night, I went to the store. Once it got dark, it was like 10 something. And on my way back, I passed a group of dudes just outside of a regular apartment building in like yard chairs and, you know, like picnic chairs and whatever, who had brought like a regular ass projector screen, found a barricade section, thrown the projector screen over the barricade section, and were watching the fight.
I was going to emphasize, when I say they live outside, I mean they live outside.
They be outside, like the park next to me, High Bridge Park. They be out there, like a whole living room set up. They got a tarp on the ground. They be having their Domino's tables, food, music, and all the chairs in a big-ass circle. And they be out there from the time the sun comes up till about 11, 12 o'clock at night.
Yeah, they living out there, like, for real. Like, they take the living room and they put it on the street. You know what I mean? So, like, this is what they do. This is kind of their culture.
Yeah, they was having a whole fight party on the street. I was like, okay.
So God bless them. I wanted to mention real quick. Well, first of all, y'all got any shout-outs before we jump?
Shout out to my body, which I've been in a fight with. But I think are stress hives for like a week.
Oh yeah.
Coming out of nowhere, then going away after like 2 hours, then coming back and going away. And after literally like a straight 7 days of it, they seem to have stopped. I still don't know why, the what, the where, what it was about. And I hesitate to go to an allergist only because I don't know. I already know what I'm allergic to. I don't know if they'd be able to find anything to explain it. So,
what did WebMD say? Or did they?
I don't do WebMD.
Oh, you don't
I did Google it. Yeah, WebMD would say I'm dying.
Yeah, nigga, WebMD would have had that.
Go to emergency room. It's over for you, nigga.
WebMD would have been like, get your will together. but I did do some Googling. The most likely culprit is that they're stress hives, but I don't think they're emotional stress hives. I think they're physical stress hives, meaning they can be a result of inflammation. And I am prone because of running injuries to inflammation. Like I take different natural anti-inflammatories on a regular basis. Like I take black seed oil, I take bromelain, like, you know, like I don't do a whole bunch of like the over the counter stuff, but I am very much prone to inflammation. And I think that because it started a couple of days after I got back from Essence, I think maybe the heat and the really long travel day I had coming back from being in that heat and often because I was walking so much, and the very long travel day I had coming back from Essence might have started.
That set it off.
Yeah.
Well, we hope you feel better.
Thank you. It's fine. It's fine now. They seem to have stopped a few days ago, so I'm praying that day. But like everybody who's under 40 who listens to us, this is your life after 40. Your body will be doing all kind of shit, and you be negotiating with your body. Like, the fuck are you doing?
What the hell is going on?
What is happening?
You got any shout-outs, bro?
Nah, you know, I ain't got talking about.
I got a shout-out, and I don't even remember old girl's name, but I actually didn't call her old girl. She's probably fucking 20 years younger than me. But shout-out to one of our listeners who did a whole meme about us cutting Sean off on the show. We saw it, we recognized it, we spoke about it, and we are
definitely
Okay, and we are definitely going to be better. So we, like, you know, I wanted to say that you know, we accept all forms of communication, you know, even if it's a bit of criticism, that's fine. It's good as long as y'all are talking, that means y'all are listening, and we appreciate it. And so, like, keep it coming. You know what I'm saying? Like, whatever it is, good or bad, that
engagement is good. And,
yeah, we like it.
And just to clarify, there are some times where I will go dark, and usually what happens is that I've always made it a point to not interject myself into our bigger business dealings.
Yeah,
and what I mean by that is, you know, to say certain things, good about people or bad about people, like either way, like I just don't ever want to make our job any harder than it already is, or any more complicated, I should say, by saying something that could potentially be taken out of context, that could potentially be taken as, you know, a shot or anything like that. So I really choose my words carefully. And so in an effort to be transparent, a lot of times, even when things are really, really good and we're doing a fun conversation about something, I will just not, you know, participate based on the fact that when things are bad, I don't participate. And I don't ever want to be that person where it's like I'm, you know, champion and waving a flag on one end. And then when you got, you know, you get called to the carpet and you have to answer for some shit that now it's, you know, you quiet as a
turtle. Now you're taking a fifth. You know?
Yeah. So I, but we do appreciate it. It is something that, you know, I will, even myself, I'll be more conscious of as well. And you know, we'll work on it.
Yeah. And sometimes there are segments that either one of us is not that versed in, or especially in the case of the last few months, as we're all at home or in our various locations taping instead of in the room together, there are times if you hear one of us quiet, it's because we might have got up and walked away for a second, to be honest.
Yeah. Yes, and not to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
It's funny that we're talking about that, not to cut you off. But when we would tape in studio, because of our chemistry and because you are physically in proximity with someone, you can tell when someone is itching to jump into the conversation. Mm-hmm. It is not the same way when we're taping in these remote locations because we're not in the same room.
Exactly.
Right. And so there's a hint of a delay. If it's just 1 second. So sometimes it would, like, we would literally be in the room and, like, you know, Naima might raise her hand if me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that is also a part of the chemistry that you see, is this sort of us still sort of figuring out that double dutch and kind of, you know, when do we jump in? When do we hold off?
Yeah. And I'm definitely going to look into like a couple of studios and maybe we can get in at least a couple times a month to kind of break up the chemistry. And just the last thing, also, sometimes it just be me going off on a tangent and them niggas don't want nothing to do with it.
Yes.
Or I'm the only one who's going to fight with him about it. So, like, when Jeff went on his Holy Ghost rant,
which Sean, I stick by.
Sean was trying to still get in heaven. You know what, Jeff? I thought about you. You need to watch the Amazing Grace doc
if you haven't. Really do. No,
because
do.
Somebody got happy in there, and I was like, I need Jeffrey to see that this was happening in 19. But
no,
like it's actually not gonna help that he sees them doing the same dance.
The same happy stuff. Dance. All right, yeah, I'm gonna take it. I might have got happy with Aretha and James Cleveland, but you know, sometimes with Sister Bessie when it's 2:30, it's like, come on now, I got.
you let Sister Bessie get her praise out like she feels it now.
Cowboys is playing the four now. I ain't got time for this. They're not stopping to get some food. go to the Target. Nothing kills me than a Sunday afternoon in the fall being up in the Target or the supermarket and seeing people with their church clothes on. I'm like, y'all just getting out. Oh!
They just got out and ate because Target comes after the food.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They ate. Now y'all still got to go to the market and all that. But anyway, we're going to get off on a tangent. But bottom line is thank you for the feedback and please. Right. Please keep it coming. I wanted to shout out real quick Missy, which is kind of roundabout shout myself out. We're set up to drop her first single August
23rd. Hey.
Yeah, she's editing up the videos and stuff like literally every day as we speak. So we're coming with it. She's doing we got her photo shoot set up for this weekend. So we're really moving. And today, actually, I'm going to actually go down. I got to go downtown this afternoon anyway. There's a billboard up. There's a Missy Lizzo video for a song called Tempo, which is doing really well. And they put the video on the billboard at Times Square.
Awesome.
For the day. I think it started at 10 this morning. So I need to get down there and kind of see that. So I just want to let everybody know we're coming. Because her fans are killing me on the gram. A couple things. Let's do a couple of little TV things first. I don't think you watch this, but sidebar. Before I even get into this, so in Mexico, I have my Netflix. So I was watching that kind of like while we just kind of chilling. There's a show. Have you seen a show on Netflix called The Family?
Mm-mm. Yes.
Yeah, I watched it. It's a black. No. This is like almost. It's some Tyler Perry type level. Like this is like basically. It's almost like a House of Pains kind of thing. It stars Loretta Devine and Richard Roundtree as the grandparents. One of the Maoris.
It is supposed to be a slight rip off of Blackish, but I heard it's not good.
Yeah, you know what? Okay. Let me just say this. It ain't that good, right? But.
Your good is hella subjective.
No, it ain't that good. It ain't that good. Even me, like, I'm like, okay, this ain't really that good. But what I will say is I did appreciate Netflix putting it on and giving it a shot. Like, and I don't know what the numbers are. I don't know if it's going to catch or whatever. But, like, I just appreciated Netflix being like, okay, it's Ralph Fuqua, I believe he's the creator who's done a lot of,
Meg DeLoach as well, who I think did Eve's show, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so a couple of people who have been around and have
had these are not new jacks. These are people that are seasoned. I watched the show.
What'd you think about it, bro?
I thought it was, so listen, I did not think it was a great show.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought people's criticism of the show was pretty harsh.
Well, of course,
and pretty but also a little pretty unnecessary.
I agree.
I think it is okay for us to have okay average shows on TV.
And that's
like, I don't think everything needs to be like this knockout, drag out, this is us emotional writing.
Yeah, Queen Sugar.
Like a light half hour comedy. Listen, was the show a little heavy-handed with some of their tropes? Yes.
Yeah.
Was it like the worst thing ever? No. I also watched Mr. Iglesias, okay? And guys, like, this is not...
Same shit, right?
Which again, is not a bad thing. Like, I think it's okay to have, sort of easy watching things. Like, if you watch the show and you're watching it with like your 62-year-old aunt, right, is not going to freak out about any of the content that's on there. You know what I'm saying? And again, I think it's okay to have those shows that are appropriate for all ages, you know, touch on a few things. Like I said, again, they're a little heavy-handed, a couple of little lazy stereotypes, but, you know, it wasn't the end of the world. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I thought they surrounded the cast with, you know, Loretta Devine is obviously anchoring this.
Yeah. And Richard Roundtree.
And Richard Roundtree is actually surprisingly not really in the show. Like, he's, you know, he's got like one or two lines every episode. Like, he's literally like a, you know, he's very rarely dominating a scene.
Yeah, true.
But again, it's fun. It's a fun half hour. It's not
it's all right.
Like, everybody, listen, man, white folks got a ton of fucking average shows.
Listen.
A ton of them.
You know what this reminded me of? And this is a show that's been on, just as an example, there's a bunch of them, like Sean said. One of the shows this kind of reminded me of is Reba.
Yes.
Reba McEntire. Oh,
I liked Reba.
No. I like Reba. I'm not dogging Reba. I'm not dogging Reba at all. I like Reba. And there was a couple other shows kind of in that same kind of CMT zone that kind of stayed on for a long time. Like you said, they weren't deep. They would kind of touch on an issue, you know, from time to time without going too deep. And Reba obviously was the linchpin, and she's, you know, extremely funny and she's very charismatic. But it's like it never got too heavy, never too deep. Reba, it's still on, ain't it? It's been on.
No, it's a syndication.
It's on syndication now, but it was on for quite a long time.
A few years. I definitely watched it. Well, maybe I started watching syndication, but I've watched it, and it's fresh in my mind because it was actually on in my hotel in Miami.
It's okay for us to have a black one of those.
We've had them. So
yeah,
I think
you know, Megan and Ralph being vets, I think that's exactly what they're going for. Like, they know what they're doing. They're not like, oh my God, this is corny, but we don't realize it. Like, they're making that show for that. Like, okay, we're going to make it. It's not going to be too deep. Loretta Devine is basically playing every character she plays, the mama.
Right.
She plays that character in every movie.
She's literally the same character from This Is Christmas.
Literally.
Down to the name.
I think because it's a Netflix original, and we are, for the past 2 years, the black original content that has been going to Netflix has been very like, it's been very like exploratory storytelling or trying to do something different or trying to do something like fantasy or sci-fi or super black or, you know, like push us.
Woke kind of stuff.
Been trying to push us into different spaces. I think the idea of just a sitcom, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, not to call it just a sitcom, but you know what I mean? Like, the age of the sitcom is pretty much over, period. So I think the concept of it being like, quote unquote, just a sitcom is what people are missing.
Yeah, but
I think that's an interesting thought, though, because I think that I think a lot of this pressure on Netflix is coming from the idea that NBC Universal is going to start to pull their sitcoms from that platform.
Yep.
And so it feels like a bit of throwing spaghetti on the wall right now. Like, they're in a race a little bit for content. You know, they just released their recent quarter and they did not hit their mark. They lost some valuation, which I personally think had always been inflated. So that doesn't really sway me. I don't, you know, a lot of people are, you know, basically writing their obituary, which I think is not necessarily
ridiculous,
right? Yeah. But the point is that with shows like this, with shows like Mr. Iglesias, also too, I just want to note that this is actually, if you look at it, it's not season one. It's part one. And so it looks to me like they're doing a bit of a different shift in their business model, which is instead of doing season one with 10 episodes, which is sort of like their normal thing, they're doing part one, 10 episodes, part two, 10 episodes, season one, which probably gives them a little bit of leeway with throwing it out there to see if it sticks, right? I'm sure that probably gives, you know, folks a little bit of, they don't have to really deal with negotiations. They kind of already have this.
They got it locked in.
They got the second season in the bag. So if it is great, we can go again, or we could just do another test run. Let's see, you know, if it gets better.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thing that they've done.
Yeah, and let's not forget, you know, they did a deal with Kenya Barris, and they did a deal with somebody else too. So they have, I think, some, you know, they obviously have like some kind of black creatives, you know, that are going to keep feeding the network content. Yeah,
I think Ryan Murphy and Shonda Rhimes have.
Shonda Rhimes. That's right. That's right. Yeah. So they, you know, we'll see what else they do. But like I said, that was my point. Like, it wasn't the best shit ever, of course not. But once I kind of got my mind right, I was like, you know, it's okay to have one of these. Like you said, like if I go, you know, I'm actually planning on going to Kentucky next month to see some family. And if I'm sitting there with my 89 year old Aunt Kat, let's watch the family on Cat.
Yes.
Aunt Cat will enjoy it. Aunt Cat won't know how to get on Netflix, but she'll be.
Yeah, she won't know nothing about the Netflix. Yeah. What you doing to my TV? You know what I'm saying?
Well, make sure you put it back. Why do
you put it on Channel 3?
If Aunt Cat can't get her news after you leave, she going to call you every day for the child. Yeah. You done came in, messed this TV up.
I don't know what I did to my TV.
I don't know what that boy did.
But, so now we're about to go into the Eddie Murphy segment of the show, which we've never done, because there's several things that kind of surround him. So the first thing is Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars of Getting Coffee, which is another Netflix series. I didn't realize this is season 7. I didn't realize.
Wow,
he's been on since 2012. I didn't realize it was that long. Yeah. So he has the new season just came out, I guess, last week. And the first episode is with Eddie Murphy. There's a few people on, of course. Eddie Murphy is on. Seth Rogen is on one. Ricky Gervais. Several people, but you know, let's talk about the Eddie episode, because Eddie notoriously doesn't do press, really doesn't do interviews much, and is really low. So him and Jerry have known each other for basically the same kind of story. They both were like born in Brooklyn, moved to Long Island with their family, and got into comedy. Jerry, I think, has lived a little further out on Long Island than Eddie, but the same kind of general things. They've known each other for like eons, since the 70s, you know? It was interesting to kind of see Eddie, because it's not, I guess it is an interview in a way, but it's more of a conversation. And of course, he's talking to somebody he's known for so long, who he respects and likes, because they do the same thing, and they obviously both had like enormous success. So he was very relaxed.
Yes.
Talking to Jerry, because he was his friend. You know what I'm saying? And they're kind of talking about comedy and talking about Long Island. And, you know, he's talking about his family and his kids and stuff. And it was just very interesting to see him that way. Like, there were a couple parts where he was definitely funny, but he wasn't like trying to be funny. Like, it wasn't like, I'm going to be funny through the whole thing. And then, of course, you could see that it also, I think, the one of the main reasons they got him to, that he did this is because it's a setup towards he's going to do a stand up with Netflix. I think the deal's closed. It's not closed. It's closing any minute now. And he talked a little bit about I'm going to get back out there. I'm going to do it. I'm going to get back. I just have to kind of get my shit together. And he talked about the kind of like the trials and tribulations of even that, trying to figure out how to do it and not have people, you know, what lines to cross and not cross anymore. It was just a very interesting conversation. And I felt like that episode was a little longer than some of the other ones.
It was very much. Dude, Jerry had, Comedians in Cars have episodes that are like 17 to 20 minutes.
Exactly.
20 minutes is basically average. This was a 45-minute episode.
Yeah, exactly. They're never that long. I think maybe like, he did Jerry Lewis one time, so like somebody like that.
Like somebody like that,
Rickles or somebody, like one of the old guys would like, not the new people.
But I understand also, because Eddie hasn't done a real interview in shit ages.
Yeah, ages.
No, after the like 20, like I'm like damn near 20 years. Like after the incident with the transsexual, Eddie stopped doing promo and press, and even when he would do it, it would be very limited.
Yeah, he'll pop up. I mean, if you look on the YouTube, he'll pop up on what's it called? Every now and again when he does stuff, Jimmy Kimmel. Like once right. There's a couple of those, but again, very far few between.
Yeah.
But he's not like on the rounds, as they say. Like when Kevin Hart does a movie or when Chris Rock does a movie, like they kind of do the whole thing. Eddie don't do that shit.
But I feel like Eddie realizes he's gonna have to do it again. He has the Dolomite movie coming.
Yes, he has a Dolomite movie coming. He has a special. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's premiering at Toronto Film Festival next month. So I think that at the state, and he's coming back to stand up. So I think that at the stage that Eddie is in his career, his people, and he probably realizes too, is like, you Eddie Murphy and everything, but it's a whole new world out there. Like, and your lead, it's not like in Dreamgirls where you were supporting cast. If you're a lead, we got to promote this shit. So that might have like a softball intro back into.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. I mean, that's the kind of back into the world. He was surprisingly candid about Bill Cosby and Richard Pryor and his relationships with them.
What did he say?
He's about Richard. He said, because Jerry asked him.
Cosby didn't fuck with him, right?
Yeah. Neither did Richard. And he talked about it. He said that Richard. He said back in when he was coming up, it was still Hollywood, kind of only room for one black person kind of thing. And so when Murphy started to blow, Richard felt threatened because he's like, oh, like, I'm about to be over and this guy's about to be the guy. But Eddie was like, meanwhile, like, I idolized Richard and I was like a puppy dog around him and everything. He said, like, if Richard would come like to the Comedy Store or something, and he'd ask like, who's out there or whatever. And if they told him Eddie Murphy was there, he would leave.
Oh.
Yeah, he said
changed, didn't it? Weren't they like, Richard in Harlem Nights and everything?
I think they got okay, but they never were to the place where Eddie wished they had gotten to.
Yeah.
He never really full on like mentored Eddie. I think they got better because I think a lot of people around Richard, like some of the other comedians, was like, man, he all right, nigga, like,
At that point, Richard had become, you know, he was older, Harlem Nights space. I'm not quite sure if we were aware of his sicknesses, but I think the rumblings internally, you know, especially in Hollywood and those circles, was that, you know, Rich is not okay. Right. We're not going to have a lot more of these years left. So I think that there was a part of that. But remember, you know, when Eddie really explodes, it's like Beverly Hills Cop is really the explosion of Eddie Murphy.
Right.
And that is like, what, 80?
Yeah, 80
to 45,
somewhere in there.
80
to 45. Like, Coming to America was 88.
That was 88. So Richard is still kind of like in his prime. Like, he's on the back end of his prime at that point.
Right.
Yeah. You know, the toys.
He's still doing buddy movies and shit.
Yes, but he was really, you know, wielding the power in that space. Yeah. So I think
he was still hot.
Yes. So it was definitely the timeline added up. And I think that after a point when Richard realized that, you know, he really, you know, like Eddie was really a fucking megastar, like on a level that not even Richard could be.
Right.
That I think he acquiesced that position of saying, okay, I'm not all the way okay with this shit, but I'm not mad. At least it's you.
Yeah. And also I think like, from what I could tell, and I'm gonna watch this after we get done, but from what I could tell though, Eddie has always paid homage to the Harlem Nights is the most visible example, but I think there is a lineage of black comedy that's kind of missing now. It maybe because there aren't as many like big time, like we don't have multiple big stand-up stars the way we did. We had like Red Fox and we had Eddie, and we had Richard and we had Bill Cosby and we had, because that was a, you know, they could occupy that space where they couldn't occupy other spaces. But there seems to be a lineage now, even though there's still a lot of black comics around, we don't have a lot of those big black comedian stars anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Not coming from stand-up. And Eddie always seemed, with the exception of Bill, because he talks shit about Bill and stand-up, Eddie always seemed to really like acknowledge the people that came before him.
Yo, he even acknowledges Bill. If you listen to what he's saying, he sounds like a kid that was hurt.
He was hurt.
Yeah.
Yes, and it fucked him up.
Yeah.
Like it fucked him up in a way and jaded him. And it probably was one of the reasons why he never really, like Eddie never really had that comedy tree. Eddie right. never really had that mentee-mentor relationship with the next phase of upcoming guys in a way that, say, a Chris Rock does.
Right.
Or the way a Chappelle does. Like, Eddie never really had that. He really kind of, like you said, he kind of secluded himself. He isolated himself a little bit. And then that was that.
Yeah. Yeah. He talked about that, how Bill was, like, really mean to him. And he said, like, he would ask, he said, Bill, he said, but it hurt him more because Bill wasn't like that with other people. It was just him. Mm-hmm. He was like, damn, like, oh, yeah. Is this me? Like, he basically was like Sean said, like a kid, almost like, what did I do?
It's fascinating to hear him because you recognize that this is like a 50 plus year old man. And he still doesn't have those answers. Not that he's, I'm sure Eddie is not spending his day concerned with what the fuck Bill Cosby thinks about him. But you could definitely tell when the subject is breached that he does not, he still can't put his finger on why.
Yeah, like what did I do? Yeah, so it's very fascinating. He talks about Michael. He talks about, he mentions Prince a bit.
Does he talk about Johnny? I still need to know how
Johnny Gill. No,
I
am.
I need to know how Johnny and Eddie became friends.
He talks about Sammy Davis.
I've never heard that story.
That's not
Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah, it's not as surprising for him and Johnny to be friends. And, you know, Eddie is still a fucking frustrated musician.
Yeah,
true.
Absolutely.
Saying, like we always forget that Eddie is really a frustrated musician. He loves, you know, like I'm sure Eddie still has a studio in the crib. I'm positive.
Yeah, there's no question.
You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, I think that there's that. I think that, you know, look, man, I think that, you know, Eddie and Johnny just probably hit it off. It just seems like an odd connection because you would think that anybody connected with Eddie has this like sort of huge personality, and we don't associate that with Johnny.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We don't see him as a funny, outgoing, gregarious guy. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So that's why the two don't seem to mesh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend I'm gonna, you know, just spoil the whole piece, but I definitely highly recommend people watch it. It's very fun and very fascinating to just kind of see Eddie just. And one other thing was interesting. He said, like, he's like, yo, like, I'm lazy. He's like, I like to do nothing. And
he's got enough money.
He said, Jerry, I mean nothing. He said, my best day is I sit in the house and do nothing.
Yeah,
like,
and
I don't go out.
Got enough money for it.
Yeah, the money's definitely not the issue.
And has for a very long time.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll be honest. I've missed Eddie in the game in a real way. Like, fuck all the family movie shit. That Dr. Doolittle last year. I've missed Eddie.
Yeah.
So I'm excited that Eddie's doing his Netflix special, and I'm excited about the Dolomite movie for real.
For real. So yeah, so that was really interesting. And then we'll spin from that into Nicole Murphy, who is Eddie's ex-wife.
Who is wilding these out.
Who's Eddie's ex-wife, and was caught by paparazzi in Italy, I think at an Italian film festival, with Antoine Fuqua, noted director of Training Day and a few other movies. Like, he's like a big director. He's like a big...
Yeah, he also did, what was it, John Q?
He's done a few things, like pretty big movies. And they were seen caught kissing each other.
Canoodling,
exactly. Kissing each other. This thing blew up because Antoine is married to Layla Rahsaan, who's most famous for her roles in Harlem Nights and Waiting to Exhale. She played Sunshine in Harlem Nights. Oh, that's how she was. She was Hammer Toes and Boomerang. That's right. I forgot about that. And I forget her character's name, Rachel Taylor, actually. But, you know, hasn't acted for a while, and, you know, they have three children, and, you know, they've been married for like 20 years. So this blew up because Nicole first tried to deny it and say they were just friends and this and that. And then it comes out from Lisa Ray that Nicole I guess, had messed around with her husband at one point.
No, Lisa didn't say her husband per se. She just said somebody else's husband.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But then the brat, I don't know if y'all saw that, on the Dish Nation confirmed that Lisa, that Nicole tried to mess with Lisa's husband.
Let me find out Lisa's husband was all over the place.
Oh, that nigga was wild. That nigga
actually fuck wild. Him up was Roxy Diaz.
That's right. That's right. I forgot about Roxy. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. He was offering up that first lady shit to everybody. Yeah. So this just turned into a huge thing. And of course, now it's died down a bit because, you know, stories burn so fast. But
I don't know. Like, there's something new. The damn Shade Room done posted something new about every 12 hours. But you're right. There hasn't been anything new since yesterday. But yesterday was when Lisa Ray said, or when they posted about Lisa saying, you know, oh, you're trying to get at somebody else's husband.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, we didn't know much of Nicole Murphy's personality when she was married to Eddie. She was just there.
Yes.
Looking pretty. When she started dating Michael Strahan, she became a little bit more of a personality couple type.
Yep. Yes, absolutely.
And even still, she wasn't much. Like, she would come on the show every once in a while. She would come on Michael and Kelly and Michael. Yeah.
They were going hot and heavy for like a while.
Yeah, they were engaged, and I think they were
going to get married
right before the wedding. Nicole has apparently put it out there that Michael cheated. I think I got the impression, and I can't remember where it was from, but I got the impression that it was about a prenup.
Yes, what I remember.
And I believe,
agreement on.
Yeah, I believe that, because what I do know is that Michael Strahan ain't ever going to let his finances get fucked up through a marriage ever again, ever. Never. Yeah,
his first wife crushed his shit.
Right, like he was in the hole.
Mike, and just to give a little context, like I think Mike played like an extra two seasons.
He didn't
really want to play.
Yeah.
The Giants had actually advanced him money on his salary.
Yeah.
Mike was, you know, and again, they weren't making the same kind of money that a lot of the athletes are making now in the sort of mid 90s when Mike, you know, came onto the scene. But like, yeah, man, like he lost his ass in that.
Yeah. And but those extra two seasons ended up working to his benefit because he was team captain when they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Twice,
which is what fucked Tiki up because Tiki left.
Yep. Right before. The season before.
So then Michael, I always make a joke that Michael Strahan found Tiki Barber's vision board in the locker room and has been living it out. Because he's had the post-career life that Tiki was, everybody expected Tiki to have, right? Yep. Meanwhile, everybody hates Tiki and everybody used to hate I used to hate Michael Strahan.
Mm-hmm.
And now I love Michael Strahan. Yep. Like, I went to Regis and Kelly with John Legend and was like, I know his manager. We used to work together. And I was like, Constance, can I take a picture with Mike, please? You know, like that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he's done such a great job. I say all that to say he's done such a great job of revitalizing his career and becoming beloved. And when he was really, like the press could not stand Strahan, and becoming beloved and getting back on his feet and having all these different ventures. And like he's a walking checkbook right now.
Absolutely.
I know he was like, and Nicole lost $10 million of her $50 million divorce settlement. Yeah. I know he was like, baby, I love you, but hell,
I can't do it. I can't do it.
I'm not putting you. We ain't even gonna have a credit card with our names on it together. Like, no. So I heard that's why he broke up. But anyway, to that point, Nicole lost most of her divorce settlement. She has no marketable skills except for being beautiful, but she's 51. She got to hit a lick.
I see this.
And Antoine is messy. Like, I found stuff from back in 2010 when people were talking about Antoine cheating on Layla.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, it's not, that part ain't new. I just think this is the first time it's been this visible.
This is where we differ. I don't think, not that maybe the hitting the lick part thing, I could see Nicole kind of maybe looking around. Although Eddie's got so much paper, I don't think he's going to ever have her fucked up.
She's going to be
living in mansions and driving the Rolls Royce every week. No, I don't think Eddie's financing that. But he's not going to have her like in a one bedroom.
Let her get evicted from her house. I promise you, he's not giving her any kind of stipend or anything like that.
I don't believe it at all. I think he got her on the payroll for some paper.
Why would you not think that Eddie would put her in a one bedroom? Just out of curiosity,
because
he ain't got to take care of kids. They good.
No, I know that. Listen, obviously, always like I say, I'm talking shit. Don't know either one of them. But I've in the little things that I've seen him talk about her, I think I've seen him talk about her to his daughter one time. Something. And then when she had her Hollywood Wives show, every now and again, she would mention him, you know, to the daughters. The older two daughters would kind of come in and out every now and again on the show. Like, I didn't ever feel any animosity.
It's not about animosity, though. Not only amicable, but it's like, bitch, I gave you $15 million.
No,
and
I know,
you
I
lost two-thirds of it.
I got
immediately.
You. I got you, but again, and I don't know how much Eddie's worth, but I'm assuming it's well north of 500 amp, right?
And he also has four other baby mothers.
I know. I got you on all of that. But what I'm saying is, I just feel like they were married the longest. They had the most kids together. They still, even though the kids are grown, they still kind of co-parent. Now they're grandparents. I think the oldest daughter had a child very recently in the past couple months. So I just think they're around each other, and I just think he'll be like, yo, just, you know, go ahead, whatever. Like, I don't think he's financing her to fly to this and that. But again, but she keeps living this lifestyle, and somebody's paying for it.
We don't
like,
know what lifestyle, but we don't really know what lifestyle. Last year was in Italy, but we don't, I mean, Italy, I can go to Italy.
But even on the Hollywood,
which was
show,
like 10 years ago.
I know, but like I said, but like she was still living a very comfortable, in a big ass house, living a really comfortable lifestyle.
But,
like,
but,
not working.
But we don't know what that looked like behind the scenes. That's what I'm saying. Like, that $5 million that she had left could very easily have been burned through already because she was trying to live a certain type of lifestyle. We don't know what kind of house she lives in now. We don't know what she drives now, right?
Yeah,
like,
she's
in Italy. Like, anytime we see pictures of her, she's out. We don't know what her, we don't know what the household situation looks like. And I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe that she did go back and try to get more money from Eddie, and Eddie was like, no, I could be making that up, but I feel like I read that somewhere, and Eddie was kind of like,
yeah, I think she did. I think at some point,
I don't know what to tell you.
She did try to, she did try to go or say like the settlement was something, but I don't really, I wouldn't trip on that. I mean, oftentimes that's lawyer shit.
Yeah.
You know, let's see if we can do a heat check and see if there's anything else we can grab out of this. But even with the going to Italy stuff, that doesn't really sway me that much because, you know, for a lot of that, first of all, there was a film festival. And so what will happen is that people like that, they're off to flying.
Prior out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, just jump on, you know, if I got two seats open,
yeah,
no, you ain't doing shit. Like, they're not staying at hotels. Like, they're renting villas. I mean, if they got an extra bedroom in the 10 bedroom villa, they're not tripping if Nicole Murphy is gallivanting around in a bathing suit. I promise you.
Yeah,
everybody's okay with that.
True.
So I mean, I think it's interesting though, just to kind of see how this has played out because, you know, nothing that I've ever heard because it's just not my world. But like, you hear about rumors of, you know, the infidelity with dude and just sort of being out there, but this level of embarrassment and this level of shame, really kind of like a slap in the face, more than anything. And then to like, you know, for Nicole's people, PR people, whatever, to release a statement that it was just a family friend and a friendly embrace.
And we're greeting each other. Hello, Nicole.
And greeting each other. like guys, like, That to me, actually, that was more confirmation than anything.
Yeah.
That this was not above board. That was Mello going on that fucking IG live talking about
Yeah, so Hudson was on the boat.
Yeah. You gonna give me your family and all this.
Yeah. Now, so
go ahead, Sean, sorry.
No. I was just gonna say, so when you see, what's fascinating more than anything to me is that how these dudes go overseas where they've invented this shit.
Yeah,
like this is what they do, and think that they're just going to, you know, just roam around free and be open. And it was just like, yo, what are y'all doing? Like, y'all are 50, man.
Yeah. Y'all know better.
Y'all are way too old for this.
Yeah. Y'all acting like teenagers and shit.
So, but now I need to address niggas on social media because niggas gonna nick. Putting up a picture of Layla Rashawn from 25 years ago and waiting to exhale, and a picture of 55-year-old Layla Rashawn who had two bed rest pregnancies in her 40s, next to from today, next to each other, talking about, well, is a man allowed to cheat when his wife lets himself go? If y'all niggas don't get the fuck on, put up a picture of your 55-year-old mama and let's see how she looks next to Layla. Like, what is wrong with y'all?
That was just mean. That was just mean. Come on.
Like, she still looks good. Yeah, she got a little bit. And whether it's, people have argued that she has lupus or some other anti-immune disease, and it does look a little like steroid weight in her face. But even if it's not, even if she just gained weight, she's fucking 55. She's still pretty. She ain't a big ass blob, but it's like, she's still a good looking woman. And also, like, you can't cannot compare a 55-year-old woman to a 25-year-old. Like, you just can't.
Yes,
you cannot. Like, what did y'all look like 30 years ago?
And I'm gonna say this, you know, a lot of you niggas, we seen your baby moms.
Right. I don't know that.
You niggas ain't got no leverage here.
No leg to stand on.
In this motherfucking conversation, niggas. So cut the shit. And zero. And more than anything, right, like, she looks exactly like what she is. A 55-year-old mother of two.
Yes.
Like, I don't know about anybody else, but, like, I see them in the supermarkets and around and about and moving around during the course of the day. And this is what 55-year-old mothers look like.
Yeah.
And guess what, guys? And I promise you, niggas was trying to get at her.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And Nicole, you know, Nicole's 51, but she is like
she's a genetic freak.
Like, literally. Yeah. And there's been some work there too, but it's based in genetics. Like, people like her, Jada's fucking mom. You know what I mean? Like, that's, you can't duplicate that. That's some other shit, right? But it's a rarity, which is why Nicole still gets access, actually. It's not actually because she's just Nicole Murphy. It's because she's Nicole Murphy and also still has that body, right? So it's like, and she was a model. Like, come on, guys. Like, it's just, yeah. It's, and she's like 7 feet tall. You know what I mean? It's just like, you gotta,
it's not, so. We're praying for the best. Like I said, we're waiting to see what Eddie comes out with the new stuff, and we're excited about that. I want to talk a little bit about New York City. So last week, New York City had in a row a blackout, a subway shutdown, and flooding, all within like a 7-day period. Mayor de Blasio was caught hell for all three of these things, for not being prepared, not being in town for the blackout, actually. Was he here for the subway shutdown?
Yes.
Okay, he was in town for that.
He was just gone for a weekend.
Yeah, the flooding, I mean, I don't know how you blame for flooding. I mean, it's nothing, it's a flash flood. It's like a bunch of water fell out the sky. It's not much.
And we had warning on that. Like, we knew that flash flood warning started, I think, 2 days ahead of time.
My theory about this blackout and the subway shutdown has been from the door that it was outside interference and hacked because of the areas that both of them happened, which were the same exact areas, both dead center, Midtown, Manhattan, around Times Square, kind of spreading out from the Times Square area. And then an article came out, I think it was yesterday or the day before,
the blackout
saying,
started on the Upper West Side.
Yeah, but
the
it also
was triggered on the Upper West Side, though.
I don't think it was triggered nowhere.
I'm saying the source of the blackout, whatever happened, wherever it started at 66th Street and spread from there.
And went down to Times Square.
Right. Okay.
Well, then that's just where the Russians had set up shop. Because I think it was somebody outside triggering this shit. And like I said, then the subway shut down in Times Square. The 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... I think in the 7, I don't know what the end of the R probably.
I don't know about the 7. I think the 7 is out for work because the 7, I don't think it's still running. I think
they're stretching over more to Hudson Yards, right? Yeah. So, and then there was flooding 2 days. Was that 2 days ago?
Yeah.
Monday night, there was flooding. So what's your thing about the city's reaction to it? Now, Blasio's been beefing with the Con Ed people.
Here's the thing about the Blasio. So, and we had this conversation on Twitter, and we've had this before. So the MTA and Con Ed are technically the responsibility.
Right?
Yeah, the responsibility. The problem is that obviously for the MTA especially, the mayor, and this isn't new to de Blasio, the mayor always catches that heat, always, without fail, because it's just he's the easiest person to point to. And the thing about Cuomo is, as our governor, he's not super visible.
No.
So we don't even really, New Yorkers don't even really think about Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah, because he's based up in Albany.
Yeah, he's up in Albany. He's here semi-often, but, you know, we know who he is. We know he's responsible for shit. But he also, he just doesn't engage with us that much. So we don't really think about Cuomo, and we don't really like him generally. But I will say, I feel like New Yorkers thought about and were engaged more with Pataki than Cuomo, but I could be wrong. But anyway, so de Blasio gets the heat. What de Blasio is not good about is deflecting accountability back to the state properly, right? Like, he was on, I think, Sean, you were talking about this, he was on New York One and answering questions without coming flat out and saying, I'm not over the MTA, right? And instead of just actually being like, I need to talk to Governor Cuomo, I need to do blah, 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 blah. Like, because it would be very easy to actually say, listen, Governor Cuomo has diverted funds from the MTA for years, and that's why we're in this position, and blah, 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 because it's the truth, and it's provable, but he doesn't do that. And the problem with de Blasio, that his personality problem is that since he got in office, de Blasio actually isn't an ineffective mayor. He doesn't handle conflict or criticism well at all. Yeah. And instead of actually trying to address it, he gets defensive, and it's almost like, well, fuck y'all too, right? That's like kind of how it feels. And so he's put himself in a position now towards the end of his term, while he's also campaigning for president, like, he couldn't necessarily have done anything differently here had he been in town for the blackout. Like, Bloomberg was out of town for Snowmageddon.
But, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and he caught some flack, but he didn't catch as much flack as de Blasio is catching, because the feeling is like, you off trying to fucking govern the country when you got shit to do here.
Yeah,
you
trying to run for president while shit is going crazy.
Right, and it's not that he could have done anything differently, but just a presence of being here would have made people feel a little differently. And then when the Con Ed blackout happened, and Con Ed has always practiced actually enforcing blackouts in certain areas to avoid wider spread blackouts. The problem in this case was that they did it in the ungentrified neighborhoods in Brooklyn.
It did it in Canarsie
and Flatbush and Jamaica.
I would be interested to know what the population comparisons are.
Right, because I was like, was it because of how much of a power draw it was?
Yes.
There's three NYCHA housing projects in Canarsie. That alone has to be a lot. But also with three NYCHA housing projects in Canarsie, you have elderly people on high floors, you have children, mm-hmm. like sweltering heat, and their power still wasn't back on like on Monday,
mm-hmm.
which I don't understand. And apparently there was no advance warning. So again, that's not on de Blasio, but it also is, because did you not know that? Did they not tell you that?
Well, I was going to say that kind of is on him, right? Because one of the things that you have to remember, that as being a leader, right, being the face of a city, is that there is a level of preparation that you have to take. You have to take on, right, as part of your job. And part of your job is preparing people, because even though Bloomberg wasn't here for Snowmageddon, right, we do remember that we were warned about Snowmageddon. It was not an unexpected thing. It just happened to come a bit faster and more furious.
And even with that, it was the MTA that wasn't prepared.
Yes. So I say all that to say, like, yes, your presence is necessary in times of crisis. Your ability to calm, to control, to ease the situation is important. Letting people know so that they can prepare, so they can ensure that, you know, Miss Irma got all of the stuff she needs. Her oxygen tank is going to be okay. And, you know what I'm saying? Like you just can't shut the power off. But I also think that it's, you know, listen, do I think that there was some population questions that came into play? Yes. I also think that it's about income and median income, because
absolutely.
there is no world in which you're going to tell me that, say, if they shut off between 75th and 95th on the Upper East Side, right? Like, we're not talking about massive apartment buildings over there. Mm-mm. We're talking about, you know, some condos, you know, maybe a couple high rises.
Co-ops.
Things like, yeah, those places are never, you know, shut down. Those stores, those businesses are never shut down.
Nope.
It's always in these sort of pockets of people that are on the outskirts of access, is what I like to say, right? Like, they're not poor people, right? Because they live in homes, right? These are not destitute people, right? But they're also not in a position of being able to call their council people or call their, you know, they can't get somebody on the phone and fuck some shit up or shake the table.
And then they're also outside that whole, and they, like Nye mentioned earlier, with Brooklyn specifically, you know, yeah, there's the factor of the gentrification in Brooklyn and how it's really, you know, almost more than Manhattan becoming the haves and the have-nots. So there's those pockets of Brooklyn, you know, Williamsburg, Brooklyn Heights, so, where, like, they're just not going to touch us. Like, you know what? It's easier for us to fuck with the people in Canarsie and East Flatbush than to fuck with the people who are spending $3 million for an apartment in Brooklyn Heights, you know?
Yeah, because you know what? That person that spends $3 million for an apartment, guess where he works? A fucking news outlet. And guess what access he has?
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they can get people on the phone in a much more faster way.
Yep.
And so that is also playing a part here. But even when you do these strategic things, I'm not saying that that's necessarily wrong. I'm saying you should be preparing them. You should have air-conditioned buses for those.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yes, you should be preparing those neighborhoods.
Like, have the cooling centers 24 hours. Yes,
an emergency readiness center that can come in there, excuse me, sort of help people, giving them, you know, clean water, ice, making sure that the you know, the people that need medical attention can get medical attention. People are not going to be able to get up and down the stairs in an elevator. If a lady is living on an 18th floor of a fucking building,
God forbid
something happens to her, like, medical staff needs to be in a position to be able to help those people. If you at least did that and at least acknowledged some level of inconvenience and humanity in people, they'd be able to deal with this in a much better way. Yeah, which is basically shut the fucking power off.
Right.
And say good luck. Sidebar to that, y'all just reminded me. I ain't told either one of y'all. So I got a letter, an email the other day from my building. They're going to be shutting down my elevators for 8 weeks.
What floor do you live on?
I live on 5.
Oh, see, this is what my mama told me, to never live above the 3rd floor in a New York building.
It is a lot of older folks in my building.
8 weeks though? Were they replacing the whole shit?
They were replacing the elevator.
Wow.
8 weeks. Like, everybody's been complaining.
Wait, starting when?
Like, soon, like in August.
Jesus.
Yeah, like in August. And sidebar to that sidebar, now you would notice, you know, the 181st Street Station, they shutting down them elevators that take you up to Fort Washington.
Really?
So next year.
They've already shut down the elevators at 168th Street.
Well, that the ones over here now is dead too till next year.
They've shut down the ones at 100. The one train ones. Well, they shut down the entire station, the one train station, because they're replacing the elevators.
Yeah, the station. First of all, I don't know how those people are going
to
get from.
That's what I'm about to say. So, for those of you who don't know, there is literally the difference in avenues that the 181st Street station. It's like there's a hill that pops up.
Yeah.
So you either have to walk like I don't even know how many feet that is, but it's a long ass climb of stairs.
Oh, them stairs, and they steep too.
Or you would have to get off at another station and just walk up
up
the street so that you don't have to deal with that.
Yeah, they're going to have to get up at 191st and walk down, or 175th.
But I don't think 191st works, because if you get up at 191st, you can't get to the higher height. You're only on, or yes, you can. Yes, you can
get to the higher one. You get up there. But then if you live on like 178th,
yeah,
that's a long ass walk.
That's a long walk.
You know, so I don't know. In my building, yeah, so there's people in here with wheelchairs and stuff, and, you know, just older folks. I'm like, damn, man, that's crazy. That's like, my shit going to be shut down till fucking damn near Thanksgiving. So laundry, my bike, food shopping.
Food shopping is about to be oof.
You might have to call, see if a Fresh Direct. Yeah, man, had them deliver that shit upstairs, man.
You might be right.
Have to lock your bike downstairs. Just tell the landlord, like, yo, man, like, I got.
You know what? Yeah, and we do have a basement. You're right. I might have to do that because, bro, come on, man.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. So neither, you know. So I made the whole fucking blackout about me, but and I wasn't even here for the blackout. Actually, I was. Right. I was actually away when that happened. I was here for the
home. Also, I got one other thing to say really quick. I'm sick of you. I'm sick of you New Yorkers, okay, taking these once every 6 or 7 year clips of New Yorkers in the city, you know, sort of coming together and doing all this shit, man, and trying to make it seem like that's fucking everyday New York.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not. It's not.
Yeah, it's fucking, at all.
I'm in New York. On a regular basis, okay? Cut the shit.
Stop. Right?
You niggas are rude.
Yep.
Okay, you're still wandering out in the street when fucking lights yep. ain't right. Like you still
white folks still ain't moving when they walking on the street towards you.
All of the shit that you hate about New York is still very much there. Now, it is a great city.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's not. But I'm saying this whole idea that, oh, my God, New York is like the best thing ever. Like, you know what, man? Like, get the fuck out of here. OK,
yeah.
Because all the people that you applauding right now, they got a fucking 2.5 hour commute because they right. can't live nowhere near the fucking city.
Exactly. Right. They live in the deep Jersey, way the hell out of Long Island. The homeless problem is still ridiculous. Like it's getting big. It's getting worse.
Motherfuckers got to take 4 different trains and a bus to get home.
Yep. So stop because some Broadway singers came out and sung one day, acting like it's Kumbaya. Yeah. That was nice. That was nice. But like, stop acting like it's Kumbaya. Stop.
We are good for commiserating in certain circumstances. Like I've always told people that the week after 9/11, the week after September 11th. You knew who was really from here and who was a transplant, because most of the people who weren't from here, they left even for a couple of days. But on the streets, like, it was the first time I remember walking the streets and people actually like speaking to each other, mm-hmm. just going whatever. But those situations are few and far between. We might all come together when some shit happens on the train because we all are mutually miserable.
You're there and you ain't got no fucking chance.
Yeah, we're mutually miserable. We understand, like, New York. Problems are so New York specific that there mm-hmm. are times that we band together. But again, it's really under just mutual understanding of the frustration. It's not about some very special, you know, spirit of community. New York is like that. We're not those people. We operate in our own individual silos for the most part. So, yeah, I agree with you on that, Sean. Oh, shout outs. The blackout made me think of this. Shout out to Marcus Samuelson and Angela.
Oh, yeah. Angela Bankhead
and Chef Ed and the Red Rooster and Jenny's team. I went to Chef Ed's mixtape dinner last week on the day of the blackout. First of all, 120 Fifth Street was like a movie. It was pandemonium because, you know, the trains weren't running on most of 120 Fifth Street. So it was mad people in the street. It's mad hot. Traffic's crazy. It's Friday. Like, it was a mess. But the mixtape dinner was great. The food was amazing. There's live music. The host is really good. He engages the crowd. And then Raekwon himself showed up and did a couple. Ralph McDaniels was there doing kind of like a video DJ type of situation, which was cool. But it was great. It was a good vibe. It was good food. It was really good energy. People had a good time. It was like a good uptown Friday night situation.
Yeah.
So Chef Ed does these once a month. These mixtape dinners once a month. I highly encourage you to, I'm assuming it might be on Jenny's website the next time, Jenny's Harlem website the next time he's doing one. I'm sure Marcus will tell us if I'm wrong because I know he's listening. Marcus was very disappointed not to see Jeff and Sean, but I told him that
I'll be at the next one.
But I really enjoyed myself. I had a really good time. It was fun.
Good. I just wanted to mention Sadie Roberts Joseph, who is a an activist in Baton Rouge, who was found murdered and put in the trunk of her car. She was one of the founders of the African American Museum in Baton Rouge. She's, you know, done a lot for the community there. They're saying that now that it was a neighbor that, that did this, they don't have a motive as to why. But she was an iconic figure in Louisiana and in the civil rights movement. She hosted the Juneteenth festivities there. She just was a fixture in that community. So I really wanted to just mention her because it was just a crazy story, like how this woman who's so well loved in that community, born and raised and lived in that community all her life, could end up, you know, murdered in this heinous way. So I just wanted to mention her because, you know, she's like a person who, you know, I don't know if she ever had really like a full on national
presence, but
she was important, and I just wanted to kind of mention her. Bro, I wanted to let you kind of take a little bit about the story with Adrian Peterson.
Oh, well, yeah, Adrian Peterson is in the news.
He's in a world of trouble.
Yeah, so Adrian Peterson, running back, NFL running back, has been in court lately. He's being sued and has multiple multi-million dollar debts that are outstanding, all of which that have occurred while earning $100 million on the field. Basically, I think the accurate number was something like 97.3 or some crazy number like that, that he's actually earned on the field. And basically, these were just a ton of loans. And what was, you know, really, really strange as I started to dig a little bit was that there are a lot of very sort of intricate instruments on how they come up with these loans. And what was the most surprising was that for a guy who not only had earned so much money, but actually had access to some people with some money, that he would have taken these loans. Now, his representatives are saying that, you know, Adrian Peterson is taking these loans because there was a trusted individual that took advantage of him and, you know, basically intimating that Adrian Peterson was robbed, that someone, you know, some sort of financial person had taken his money, but they would not give specifics. And apparently they are, I guess, in the process of either court proceedings or either have a gag order. Either way, it hit the news and it just sort of spread like wildfire. And, you know, for a guy to earn that kind of money, like, you know, he's probably netted, meaning he walked away with, you know, probably $55 billion.
Yeah, 50 to 55.
And that's just on the field, guys. That is not any additional endorsements or any of that sort of stuff. That is just on the field. So if you wanted to throw another, you know, $15 million net into that pot, you know, a guy's made, let's say $65 million, this guy's made. And we're talking about in a 13-year span. He's only been in the league 13 years.
Yeah.
Right? So we're talking about in a 13-year span that he's made that kind of bread and is actually in this kind of debt. And it's fascinating. And I know, you know, Jeff, you had some questions about how the fuck does that even happen?
Yeah, how do you get into that debt? Well, you're taking out $5 million loans. I mean, not saying $5 million is a lot of money, but, like, when you've made, you know, like you said, sniffing 70M, you know, after taxes, and you got to take a $5 million loan. I'm like, what were you doing with the bread, dude? Like,
well, that's what was – so when I really started to dig, there are three loans that are outstanding, okay? One of the loans was taken out in April of 2016.
That's when he got hurt, right?
Well, he got hurt. No, that's what's interesting. This is before he was hurt.
Oh.
So he has – this is an indication – of someone that has had financial issues.
Yeah.
Because there would be no real, there's no real reason here. Like, you can't really put your finger on it, right? Like, why he would need to take those loans.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2017, Adrian would have been up for a $18 million payday.
Okay.
If he hadn't gotten hurt, but he got hurt. So he was cut. He didn't get the $18 million payday. Prior to that, he had already taken out a loan of about $2.4 million.
Wow.
Then in April, he goes and takes out another loan of roughly about $4 million. Now, it said that the $4 million loan was sort of to consolidate some debt, which happened, you know, when you're paying these sort of exorbitant interest rates, you know, saving 6-8% a month by consolidating the loans and paying off the loans actually, you know, work out to your favor. So it's not unheard of. But in like many predatory spaces, one of the loans he had was like a like a 15% interest rate, right? Like just straight up.
Mafia.
Which is basically like you would have been better off going to Paulie Walnuts in an hour.
Yeah, absolutely.
Getting that money. Absolutely. But okay, he gets the money. It's 15%. Basically, he misses the first payment. The interest rate jumps from 15% to 23%
in the
first payment.
That's nuts.
So now, you know, that's all being tacked on. Mind you, he goes in March of 2017 when he realized he's not getting the payday and gets $5 million from another group. Now, all of these guys, I went to one of these companies' sites, and it's kind of like interesting because we talked about how they sort of will you know, basically go after these athletes. And this particular company does Democracy Capital, commercial loans between $25,000 and $50 million. Advisory specializing in mortgage and loan workout. Bridge loans, which basically, you know, people go to sort of get them to the next phase of a project so they can get more funding.
Okay.
Things like that. Construction loans, you know, again, something you can access like that. That seems very normal. Loans to professional athletes. That is literally listed.
That's like what we do.
What we do.
So basically, we see you coming and we're going to get you.
So we talked about that because what happens is that if you're living a lifestyle that is, you know, for the sake of numbers, right? If you're living a lifestyle of a $200,000 a year person and you need to, you know, someone loses their job and you need to back out into a $75,000 a year lifestyle, that is a lot easier to do than someone who is living a $6 million a year lifestyle needing to back out into a $300,000 a year lifestyle.
That's almost, I'm not going to say impossible, but that's really hard to do.
Yes.
From
yes.
6 million to 300 grand is like.
And we're not talking about just actual money. We're talking about literally making the payments, being able to move a house that size,
yep.
being able to move properties like those
get
houses.
Get rid of the cars, yourself. Get rid of everything.
Yes. So usually players, you know, players get into jams. I don't want to paint this like this is something unique to Adrian, right? Players get into jams. People with money get into jams. What they normally do is they go to other people with money.
Yeah.
And they say, yo, you know, hold me down for, you know, 200 grand. I got you when this signing bonus kicks in, whatever. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's usually something that can happen. Or, you know, you get some level of access to people who are reputable places. But these D'Angelo vehicle sales is one, you know, Capital Democracy, Capital Asset Management is another. All of it's very predatory.
Yep.
It feels very much like what the housing market was doing.
Interest rate is going to be off the charts.
Interest rates are off the charts. They are, I believe, one of the companies is suing the Lloyd's of London and the underwriters for his insurance policy. The insurance policy didn't kick in. Like, these are very, very intricate financial things. But all in all, this basically comes down to a very fundamental thing. Just spending more money than you have. Like, yep. That's really what this shit, you know, that's ultimately what this boils down to. Look, Michael Jackson was in trouble financially.
Yep. Yep. You know,
it happens. It yep. happens. And so this is a guy who, in theory, has been living probably a $10 million a year lifestyle versus, you know, when he probably should have been living more like a $2 million a year
yeah,
lifestyle.
Yeah, he was
blowing through his capital.
Yeah.
He's blowing through his capital. And God bless him, but, you know, listen, he'll have a pension. That's not going to kick in for a very long time, and it's not a lot of money. You know, the NFL has a terrible fucking union. It's not going to be a lot of money. Hopefully he's, you know, got something that he can depend on to, you know, help him with ailments. We've seen this in time and time again with NFL retirees as they get to that between that 45 to 55 age range, you know, all of those injuries and ailments start to pile on.
Yeah. So, and so you got all kind of health issues.
Health issues.
The hospital all the time. And yeah, insurance and all that. It could get really, you know, really funky, man. Like, I mean, you know, honestly, like, look at a guy like O.J. Simpson. Like, God bless him that he's as healthy as he is at his age. Like, he's walking around. He's still playing golf. Like, excuse me, a lot of guys he played ball with aren't even alive.
And more than anything, man, it's, you know, you hate to see a very stereotypical story about this. And again, I don't want to paint this as something, you know, Adrian Peterson, you know, exclusive to him.
Yeah.
You know, this happened to Tim Duncan. This has happened to Dwight Freeney.
Yep.
You know, sometimes you give your money to reputable people
and that they rob you.
But they also make very risky investments.
Yeah.
And that's what investments are. They might work and they might not work.
Yeah. And a lot of these guys also, immediately sign off a power of attorney to these people. So these people are able to kind of take the money that they give them and move it around in all kind of ways and commission off the moves that they make with the money, even if the person is a commissioning and the person doesn't even have any idea what's really going on because you've given power of attorney to your financial people so they can just kind of do whatever the fuck they want. They can make 20 trades a day, commission each trade, even though you're losing bread. Like, it's all kind of like little kind of tricks that they have way deeper than I know of to kind of, you know, take your money and burn it and eat off of it while you don't, you know, you're sitting there as long, you know, because like, you know, with a lot of cats, you know, and it's not black cats, white cats too. It's like, yo, as long as you can walk in the store and buy that car or buy that watch or live in that house, you think you're Gucci. I'm Gucci. I bought another Rolls Royce today. I'm good. I got money. Not knowing what's really, you know, happening until, you know, the bubble bursts and then the shit gets crazy. You know, so.
One of the things about people who come from a more disadvantaged background, right, and not really financially savvy, right? One of the things that all of these guys use to sell them on is making your money grow. Like, that's a big part of their spiel, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone wants to feel like they're smart, and everyone wants to feel like they're in the know. You know, nobody wants to have had the opportunity to invest in Google and didn't, right? And guess what, man? Like, 4%, a conservative 4% is just not sexy for a lot of people.
Yeah.
They want to be able to say that they've done this or they've invested here or they moved here. And you know what, man? Like, sometimes it is okay
to get your
4%, man, on some shit that got 120-year history of giving a minimum of 4%. And you know what I'm saying? Like, there's just so many other instruments, I think, but you know, like I said, you're not going to get these like sort of massive paydays. And again, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, they just have more money than they know what to do with. And so the perception is that, hey, you know, your money just can't sit in the bank because, you know, in theory, I mean, obviously there are, you know, federal regulations and shit like that on what can be insured on a bank account. But I think that was what I think needs to happen at this point is that there needs to be some sort of regulatory practice with any lending institution, whether it is a traditional one that's regulated by, you know, federal government. There has to be something done here, man, because this is crazy, dude.
Like
the fact that I can't think of any way that he would have been compliant and potentially be approved for a loan, having defaulted on two previous multi-million dollar loans, not even a year ago.
Yeah.
So they were they were banking on him fucking up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. To get him to take another one and go deeper in the hole, you know? Yeah, so that's a horrible story, man. I mean, wish him well. He's got kids and all that. And I'm sure he's, you know, another, like a lot of athletes taking care of his family and this and that. And it's a bad situation. I want to just wrap up by saying watched polls last night. It's been a crazy season, man. A lot of
powerful, impactful.
Yeah, very powerful, impactful. They're really deep into the AIDS and HIV. What's the word I'm looking for? When it gets plague, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, it became an epidemic.
Yeah, epidemic. That's the word I'm looking for. Epidemic. Yeah.
Yeah,
so they're really heavy into that now. And then Real Housewives of Potomac has just been petty central, delivering on your petty every Sunday, just drama-filled. I kind of missed the bit of the lighthearted tone that they used to have, because now they all just be going each other's necks, like, all the time.
I mean, they used to, too. It's still not as bad. I mean, it's mostly...
It's not as bad as Atlanta.
It's not as bad. Well, no, but it's not even as bad. I mean, even in Potomac, every season, like last year, which they even showed in the flashback, like in the past, has been Monique threatening to roll up on people.
Yeah.
It's also been Ashley.
Yeah.
Roll up on people. I think the only season.
That was Candace.
Yeah, I think the first season was the only one where there wasn't somebody threatening to throw something, throw hands, something. Yeah. But, you know, there's still other stuff to that. I mean, there's still other enough to balance it out. Ashley and her man is just. Like, girl, I mean, clearly she's pregnant now. God bless. Or
yeah. I think she had the baby.
Might be here. Yeah.
She had a boy. Yeah.
So God bless. But that there's some more there. I don't give a fuck. But,
absolutely. And I think that her mom this week was lying about her dad.
Agreed.
I think there's way more to that story than her mom's.
I really want to know. Katie is not a central character this year, but something's going on with her. Have you guys noticed how horrible the wigs are that she's been wearing?
Yes.
Katie look high. Katie be high.
And she said something about not having air conditioner in her house one time. Like, I'm trying to figure out what's going on with Katie. Something's happening with Katie.
Yeah.
I don't know what
it is. Coming from where she used to be, which is like this super prim and proper, snooty, you know, basically I'm white, but I have black skin type of girl,
right,
to now being this kind of like high hippie chick, a skewed wig, no air conditioner,
like,
living on a farm.
That's like a $20 beauty supply store wig. Yeah. I don't understand. Like, she ain't pull it, like, just pull it down, Katie.
Katie. My man Ray, who damn near Karen made my man Ray damn near have a heart attack at the table.
Or even voices. Ray like, oh shit.
Ray was like, oh wow. Okay.
I just need Ray to go one time to a barber though. I'll stop cutting your own hair, Ray. Go to the barber. You know, just
Ray,
you got
Ray 2 years from needs somebody help him go take a piss, man. I don't know what you think this nigga just going to barbershop on Saturday.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, exactly. We'll weigh in there and let him sit in the chair.
I do also want to give a shout out to Love and Hip Hop Atlanta, which is now in its first reunion.
I saw a clip. I didn't see the whole show.
I mean, this season, as far as it goes, was this season was a little bit underwhelming. Because some of the characters we love best, like Stevie, is no longer a regular character,
mm-hmm.
Or a regular presence, I guess I should say. Kurt is actually behaving his fucking self. So Kurt mm-hmm. and Rashida were like the couple therapists this season. So that's different and new, right? The drama that there was with people that were not that invested in yet.
Okay.
They're the new characters who are kind of really kicking up dust. Candy's cousin, who's the Akbar, this chick Spice, the rapper,
mm-hmm.
and Pooh, Hiram Hicks's quote unquote wife. Like,
I didn't know Akbar was Candy's cousin.
Yeah,
Akbar's Candy's cousin.
Candy was on the show early in the season because she helped Akbar get her apartment.
Okay.
But she was talking to Akbar like, yo, stop fighting every fucking 10 seconds. Yeah. You know, like that type of situation. But adding Shekinah, Tiny's friend Shekinah, Shekinah I enjoy on the show.
You like her?
I like her. I enjoy. And even like Scrappy, like, you know, Scrappy's there. Erica's not on as much anymore. Mama D was there in the beginning, not so much towards it. And so some of the people that we used to look to for like that comic relief,
they're gone.
They're not really there, you know, as much. Jacques still is a funny motherfucker, but it's not quite the same, right?
I got you.
But one of the highlights of this season, which I thought kind of took away from stuff, was that this new woman, I'm gonna call it Gianna girl, she fucking 50 probably, Pooh, Hiram's alleged wife. Her only purpose on the show was beefing with Carly.
Carly Red.
Mm-hmm. About whether or not she and Hiram actually had a threesome, right? She, Carly, and Hiram actually had a threesome. That was literally her whole entire storyline.
Mm.
And is continuing now into, you know, and she was talking about her little fake business, whatever. But it's like, woman, if you don't get your ass some actual, like, business about yourself to talk, like, the fact that this is how you get on the show and this is all you have to talk about.
Yeah. As a grown-ass woman with grown-ass kids.
Super grown with super grown kids.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, and super, like, nasty and petty. Like, I fully don't believe this is for camera for her. Like, I believe she's that nasty.
Really mean like that, yeah.
Yeah. Even in the reunion, like, people are legit upset and have real gripes and complaints, and she laughing and carrying on and shit. So I just, peace to Monami Entertainment. We don't need Pooh to come back. Like it all.
Okay, well, do we know that Timona Mean Entertainment? I'll tell him when I stop by the office today. Yeah.
And then peace to Don specifically on Black Ink Chicago, who has really made a turn and who is like the most mature person on the entire show. Not that it's a low bar, but who is the most mature person on the entire show right now.
The nigga who fight the least.
Exactly. When that nigga punching holes in the ceiling, like last season.
Like saying he's the tallest short person, the tallest little person. But he is like, and the only time he gets mad now is when he's mad because everybody else is fighting and he wants them to stop. Like he starts flipping tables to shut everybody else up.
Yeah.
And him and Ashley seem to be doing good. Like, but he's got like a little Amazon series or Netflix series or something that he's been on, so he got a little check coming.
Okay, all right.
So he got a little.
All right, Don. God bless
you. He done grew up. Good for you, Don.
Grew up. All right, we're gonna wrap it up on that note and get going with the rest of our days.
Oh, and Euphoria got 2 episodes left and it's off chain.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. I was gonna bring it up this week, but I'll wait till next week. We'll talk about it next week. Okay. I'm all caught up too, so we'll talk about it next week.
All right.
We're gonna wrap it up and we'll see y'all next week.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.